Good evening. It's good to see you all this evening. We are thankful for your presence, that you're visiting with us. We're honored to have you, and I hope that you're glad that you came. If you have your Bible with you, I invite you to turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Ecclesiastes chapter 8 is where we'll pick up this evening in our study of this great book. I was thinking, I think we made the statement last week that I read that someone had made the statement or commented on these passages in chapter 7, and I thought was a pretty accurate statement to make, that he said that maybe verse 29 of chapter 7 may be the most profound thing of all the things the Ecclesiastes writer had to say. And he had a lot to say that was profound, obviously. And things like, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter, fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. We'll come into that near the end of the book. But verse 29 says, truly this only have I found. And what is impressive about that thought is because, you know, as you've studied this with me throughout the weeks, that he has been searching diligently for meaning and purpose, for truths that seem to be mysterious and hard to unlock. He's been looking at his outward circumstances and the world in which he lives, that is, that world which is under the sun, the world which you and I live, and trying to gain from his earthly experiences truths that he thinks will unlock the mystery of why he's here and his purpose here. And he tries everything he can try. He tries education, tries earthly wisdom. He tries effort and industry. He becomes a builder. He tries pleasure. He tries drinking and carousing. See, fat will bring him anything. And what he finds, no matter if he's building homes and houses or planting vineyards or whether or not he's getting drunk, there's nothing about either one of them that lasts as far as bringing him meaning and purpose to his life. And so he is on a search for these things and finds over and over again it's vanity, it's the grasping of wind. There's just so much about life that is not only remains a mystery, but creates a mystery of us trying to figure out why we're here and what's the purpose of it. And so he said, truly, truly, this only have I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. The problems in this world are not because of God. It's because of what man has done with what God has given us, including ourselves, our imaginations, our hearts, and our deeds. So let's pick up tonight and continue reading from this wise man about what he's found. Chapter 8 begins this way. I want to read a few verses here, if you'll read along with me. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, beginning of verse 1. Who is like a wise man? Who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing. For he does whatever he pleases him, whatever pleases him. Where the word of a king is, there is power. And who may say to him, what are you doing? He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. Because for every matter there is a time and judgment. Though the misery of man increases greatly. For he does not know what will happen. So who can tell him when it will occur? No one has the power over the spirit to retain the spirit. No one has the power in the day of death. There is no release from that war, and wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. All this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. All right, let's pause. Now, again, I say this as I've said to you before. As you read through his writings, I want you to keep in mind that as you see, some things sometimes seem to be disjointed. In other words, what is the connection to these things to what has been said before? Sometimes it appears there is a disconnect, but there are themes that you'll see woven throughout his writings. And I said one good way to think about how he writes here is to think about how somebody might write in a diary from one day to the next. He may write a few lines and the next day pick up in the same spot with a completely different attitude or experience about what he's going through that day. And so you can see that here in the writings of Solomon. Sometimes he switches gears completely, even within the same thought pattern. And one of the things you'll notice, though, that's part of the pattern by the way he writes, is that he does spend a lot of time doing two things. One, he spends a lot of time extolling the benefit and blessing of wisdom in a person's life. There is a benefit to being a wise person. There are things about your life that will be better, generally speaking, if you're wise. It will not cure every problem. It will not eliminate every problem. There are some things that are still that will still take place and happen even though you're wise. But wisdom has a benefit and a blessing to the person who has it, who uses it, and engages in his life. That's the first point. The other thing you see woven throughout his words is that while all that is true, wisdom will always have its limitations. It will not cure every problem. It will not solve every problem in your life, no matter how wise you are. And we will remember that the one writing this says that, you know, I was wiser than all who were before me in Jerusalem. And he certainly has a lot of struggle here, even in his wisdom. So wisdom is good and useful and a blessing to you and will make your life better, generally speaking, but it will not solve all your problems. Wisdom will always have limitations in this life. So keep those two things in mind. And you see it woven in his writings here. And he does it again here in chapter 8. He says here in chapter 8, now he says, who is like a wise man? And I'm going to tell you the kind of things wise people do, the kind of attitudes they have. Who is like a wise man? And who knows the interpretation of a thing? Who can figure out what a thing means or how you ought to, the way I think about this, who can figure out how it is you ought to kind of deal with every situation? That's what he's talking about. He said, a man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. How does wisdom make a man's face shine? I see y'all all looking at me, and y'all ain't got no sunglasses on, so I ain't shining too much, am I? Wisdom makes a man's face shine. Is there anything you can remember in the Bible about what it means when a person, what the Bible says about someone's face shining? Sometimes it talks about our countenance, our appearance. I'm sorry, someone else said something? The Lord's face. Well, you remember that, what's number 6 and verse 25? I think it's number 6 and verse 25. It says, with Moses pronouncing God's blessings and praying to God, it says, may the Lord's face shine upon us. And the idea behind that is that if a person's face is shining upon you, he's smiling upon you. He's blessing you. He's giving you good things. Now, he says this, that a wise man's wisdom makes a wise man's face shine. So if God's face is shining on us and we're receiving benefit and blessings to us, what he's saying is he says, when you have wisdom in your life, you're going to do that for other people. You're going to make their life better. You're going to bring blessings to their life. You're going to be a benefit. God is a benefit to us. His face is shining on us. He's being a blessing to us. He's helping us. He's guiding us. He's strengthening us. Lord, let your face shine upon us. Be a blessing to us. So if you're letting your face shine upon someone else, then you're being like God in that sense. You're being a blessing to them. You're guiding them. You're helping them. You're there for assistance in whatever way they may need. It means when your face is shining upon me, you're blessing me. You're helping me. With people who are wise have that ability to help someone else, to encourage someone else. And he says, and the sternness of his face is changed. He's at a place of peace that sometimes people are not at who don't have wisdom. And when they get all wrinkled face or stern-faced or confounded, and all that shows in a person's face, he says that wisdom has a way of bringing about a demeanor for a person that people don't enjoy if they don't have wisdom. And that's sometimes because of the mistakes they made without wisdom. All right? And now he attaches this to the idea of how wisdom is a blessing to you and an encouragement to you, and how that you present yourself to other people. He begins to talk about, for example, about how you deal with those in authority. Specifically, he says, the king. He says in verse 2, I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. You know, one of the things that was interesting to me when I thought about, when he talks about, if you're a wise person, it's going to show on your face. You're going to be a blessing to other people. Your countenance, as Yankee said, your countenance matters to people. They gain something from that. They see your countenance and gain something from that. And one of the things I thought about I don't know if you remember this or not, but in the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah was a servant under King Artaxerxes, the Medo-Persian king. And you remember that while he was a servant in the land of Babylon, which once had been Babylon, that had become part of Persia because they had conquered Babylon, that he had heard about how his nation or his people's nation back in Jerusalem was destroyed. He had heard reports about how it still lay in ruin. Now, you might remember that Zerubbabel and Ezra had already begun to take people back to Jerusalem to rebuild the city, to rebuild the temple, rebuild the city. But so a number of years have passed since they first began to go back and rebuild the city. And Nehemiah learned that even though a lot of years had passed, he heard that the city, and particularly the walls of the city, still lay in ruin. And when he heard that report, the Bible says he wept. And he wanted to do something about it. But he worked for a king. He worked for King Artaxerxes. And he lived in a different country. But he wanted to go back and do something about it. So in Nehemiah chapter 2, it says the next day, as Nehemiah's job was, he was the king's cupbearer, which means he brought the king's his drink. But not only did he bring him his drinks, he tasted his drinks before. And he was the guy that they made sure that if it didn't kill Nehemiah, it wasn't going to kill the king. He had that job. So he had a very trusted job for the king. The king trusted him. The king depended upon him. And the king appreciated his position in his kingdom. This is my cupbearer. It wasn't no regular old maid or servant job, right? So the next day, he comes into the king's court as he always done. And he was sad. He had that on his mind. And the king saw it on his face. And he said, Nehemiah, what's wrong? I'm paraphrasing. This is the new Casey literal translation. He said, Nehemiah, what's wrong with you? All this time you've worked for me, I've never seen you this way. You've never been even sad in my presence. But I can see it on your face. And do you know what it says that Nehemiah, you know what his response was? It says that Nehemiah was what? What would you guess? Dreadfully afraid that he let the king see that on his face. He was sad. And he was hurt. And it showed on his face. And he said, when the king saw it, it says Nehemiah was dreadfully afraid. Why would he be afraid to show the king that? You don't want to upset the king. You want to be whatever the king needs you to be. Another thing too, if we'll relate this to smaller. If you got a business and you got employees, and you got one that's mad all the time, and you see that on his face, his attitude, and his demeanor, then you don't want him around. You don't want him around. You don't want him around. You don't want to infect other people. You don't want him around your customers. Same way, some of you are school teachers. You see that on the kid's face in your class, and you know something's not right. But the king would take that. Why are you not happy to be here? You're my cupbearer. You want to go to the salt mines and dig salt instead of live in the palace and bring me this golden cup of whatever he's drinking. What if he's drinking? Nehemiah's drinking too. He's a taste tester, right? So you want to swap jobs with one of those guys out working in the mines? Why are you not happy to be here? And so it just kind of stuck out to me that he talks about how, wisdom, you can see that on a person's face. You're able to shine and bless other people. And when you're not that way, they see that. And he attaches it to the idea of how you stand before a king. Use wisdom before a king. And so he says, here's the benefits of wisdom. All right? Here's the benefit and the blessing of wisdom. Number one, he says in verse 2, keep the king's commandment. Why? Is the king always right? Is the boss always right? The king's not always right about things, but. Or you may disagree. I'm not talking about when you have to make a choice between the God and the king. Everybody knows what God says about that. But sometimes the king's got ideas and rules and laws that we may think are not right. But he says, you keep the commandment of the king. Why? Because he's a good king? What reason did he give here? Your oath to God. What's it got to do with keeping the king's command? Serve God first. But what does God want you to do? Be subject to the rulers over you. Why? Because they're perfect? Well, they did put them. That's what Romans says, that they're the powers that be ordained of God. But why would that be a useful thing for us to do for God? They put you, I'm like an auctioneer now. I see your hand go up. He's scratching his head. I thought he had a comment. Why is that? Why would God want us to be careful to keep the king's command? Yes, sir. Okay. Maybe it gives you a chance to have honor among the king. What's another reason? What's the most obvious reason why you keep the king's command? That's right. Because he kills you if you don't keep his command. He locks you up. He gets your family and he arrests them. He drags them out of their homes and chains them to sticks and stones and to rocks. You keep the king's command. It's better for you to keep the king's command. So keep it. I think about that. Yeah, they outlaw that show that comes on, Cops. Is this still come on? Bad Boys? You've been on that? Bad Boys? What you going to do? You know, just that too. And I see kind of these minor things turn into such a huge thing because immediately whoever's pulled over starts saying, I ain't getting out of my car. No, I ain't asking your question. No, you can't see my life. You know, they've got the sticks and the guns. But they immediately begin to be obnoxious toward those in positions of authority. That's never going to work out good for you. Never. So it's to your benefit to have respect for that. And God speaks to that, as Keith pointed out in the New Testament, Romans chapter 13, to have respect for that. It doesn't mean that you respect a person's wickedness or evil, but you respect the position of authority. It's to your benefit and blessing to do that. And one thing God tells us to do that we probably don't do enough of, I don't do enough of, I need to do more of. I do my share of mouthing off when I don't like something. But you know what God tells me to do for that person, for those in authority, to pray for them. Pray for them. All right, so don't do that. Verse 3, do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Don't be hasty to leave from his presence. Why would that be wise not to do that? That's right. Thank you very much. You know, the king comes along, and here's everybody want a chance to talk to the king. He gets up to you, and you say, "What's up, man? How you doing?" You walk on off. It's a level of respect. You are free to go when he's done talking to you, not when you're done talking to him. It's kind of a military thing there, isn't it, for you military people? You salute, and you stay saluted until he tells you that you can unsalute, right? So you do your salute. Is that the way it works, Mike? And then what y'all tell him? What was that you used to tell him? At ease, soldier, I'll be here all day. You ain't got to salute me every time you see me. That's what that means, ain't it? I'll be in the area all day. Put your hand down. All right. So show him respect. And then he says, do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. What's that mean? He can. Do not take your stand for an evil thing. Okay. That's right. What he perceives to be. Don't you come in here and you're going to make your stand? You're going to stand up and say, here's I'm going to make my stand here. It's okay, I'll kill you. You know, I'll get rid of you. Don't need you in my presence. I'll get rid of you. So you think you're going to make your stand and you're going to have a great cause here. And it winds up causing you a lot of misery and trouble and pain because he does. What does a king do? Whatever he puts. See, all this is to help you live in a kingdom under this type of king. It ain't to respect. It ain't just because he ought to be he's doing everything respectful. It's not because he's without any moral flaws. It's not because his way is the perfect way. It's the best way for you to live your life. And you know the Bible speaks about that in the New Testament. Not just it pertains to how we deal with government, but talks about when the Bible says servants obey your masters. Now that doesn't sound like the way anybody ought to live. Right? That's right. Servants, obey your masters in the Lord. For this is right. Obey your masters. So, well, children ought to obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Obey your masters. Servants, obey your masters. Why would you obey another man? Well, he's your master. Now, that's not God telling the servant, this guy is over you. I recognize he's over you, and he deserves to be honored more than you. That's God saying, I don't want that master beating on you, harming you, hurting you, hurting your family, hurting your children. It's just using the good sense and judgment you got to make things work out best for you in this life we live. That's why he gives us some instructions about how to live with other people and deal with other people. That it looks like at times we got to put up with some stuff that's not good or not pleasant. And the truth of the matter is, that's exactly what he said you got to do. But if your attitude is what it ought to be, that you can do that because you're not thinking about being here forever. You know, we get all worked up about stuff sometimes, and I get worked up too. And things bother me. It bothers me when others are mistreated. It bothers me when things go on I know are wrong. It bothers me greatly. But my daddy used to say, Casey, in 100 years from now, what difference is it going to make? It ain't going to make no difference to me in 100 years from now. It may make some difference to somebody that I would have loved if I'd have been here 100 years from now. But I tell you what will make a difference to me in 100 years from now is what I did in this life for God. Because what I got left 100 years from now is eternity. And so I can get myself all disjointed and remove myself from God here. I found this the other day in a book. I'm going to read it to you. It said, face these facts. You with me? Face these facts. Number one, you will die. You will die. Number two, what you do every day, God has granted you the power to control that destiny when you do die. Your life, in so many ways, in this life and the life to come, is in your hands every day. Face these facts. Here's the next one. You are not the person that you want to be. You're not the person you know you need to be. Face these facts. You're not as happy as you could be if you made better decisions every day. Face these facts. Wow. Face these facts. You must live your own life, and that is the only life you will live. Face the facts. You will not live the life of your neighbor. You will not live the life of your children. You will only live your life. Face these facts. Here's the next one. There is a God. You can reject that fact, but that fact exists. Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Face that fact. You may choose to reject that fact, but the fact is that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Jesus lived and died and is alive again. Face that fact. You have to decide what you will do with your life in relationship to the fact that there is a God and that Jesus Christ is His Son. You may decide not to have anything to do with Jesus or with God. But face this fact. One day, you will die. And if you choose to reject Jesus, then when you do die, one day you will die. And if you choose to have nothing to do with Jesus, when you do die, He will have nothing to do with you. Face these facts. So much of our consternation about the things that we wring our hands about have nothing to do with eternal things. Nothing to do with eternal things. Only things underneath the sun. And like Solomon, we're disgusted about a lot of it. It worries us. God ain't asking you to be happy about all that. He just asks you to look beyond this life under the sun to another life. Brother Randy? or a parent or a teacher. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, that's a good point, because it all comes from there to start with. You know, it's people, I remember being in a class one time and looking at the Old Testament, obviously, which was the law for the children of Israel for a period of time, in a particular period of time, for a particular purpose. And, you know, there's laws in the Old Testament that if a child was disobedient to the parent to a certain extent, then they stoned the child there. And that sounds awful. But I remember being in a class one time and people talking about that, you know, and so God's trying to keep them together as not only a spiritual people, but as a corporal people. That is to say, the law of God for the children of Israel was not just their spiritual law, it was their everyday law. It was the law of their land. So it had to serve both purposes. And they said, how awful. Why would you have to put a child to death by being disobedient to his parents? How is that? It's because before that child knows how to be respectful to God, he learns to be respectful before he knows there's a God. And if he can't learn to do that, he's never going to be respectful to God. It all kind of works together for God's purposes. The way God looks at it is that that's why he says you obey the king's command because of your oath to God. God instructs us to respect positions of authority, because that's the way God set up order in this world, is by authority. Paul talked about that in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. He said, I have you know, the head of woman is man. The head of man is Jesus. And so you got God, Jesus, man, woman. It's not that one is better than the other. It's just God set up a system that is a system of authority throughout his creation. And whenever it's not respected, then it's kind of chaos. So that's a good analogy that you made there. Anyone else have any comments? All right, so to summarize this section here, what he talks about is if using wisdom in your life to benefit you, to be a blessing to you. And if you have respect for people who are in positions of authority, things will be better for you. And he says that in verse 5. He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. So you keep the king's command, you'll experience nothing harmful. Is that absolute? It's not absolute, but generally speaking, that's true. So it's to your benefit. It's to your blessing. You want to have a better life? Use wisdom. How do you use wisdom with the king? You respect him. You give him the respect that he deserves as you're doing it to God. You don't be hasty to go from his presence. Verse 4 says you don't tell him what to do. You don't ask him, why are you doing this? He's the king. All right? So it says in verse 6, because for every matter there is time and judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly. Now, what causes that? Well, here he gets to the limitations of wisdom. So wisdom makes your life better if you use it. One of the ways you can do that is dealing with other people. And one of the ways you deal with other people is you deal with people who are going to be in positions of authority over you. And as Randy pointed out, it wouldn't apply just to a king, but to an employer, to a teacher, to a principal, to a family situation. It applies all along those corridors where there's authority and subjection. So he says, here's the limitations of that wisdom, though. Number 7, for he does not know what will happen. Who can tell him when it will occur? Now, you can be wise as you want to be. You'll never know everything that's going to happen and when it's going to happen. You just some things you'll never know. Verse 8, you have no power over the spirit to retain the spirit. What spirit is he talking about? Mm-mm. Your spirit. What's that spirit do? What happens when your spirit leaves? What happens to you when your spirit leaves? What happens to your body when your spirit leaves? Your body dies, right? As James talks about, as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. So can you keep the spirit from leaving the body? In other words, can you prevent yourself from dying? You can hasten your death, I'm sure. You know, there's those ways that you can hasten your death. But as I told someone one time, you know what? You can't. If God doesn't want you to die, you're not going to die. And if God's ready for you to die, you can't stop it. With 10 engines and a generator. You can't stop it. No one has that power. That's the limitations of wisdom. He describes it this way. He said, no one has power in the day of death. And now, do we try? Yes, we try. And that, you see that the next line. What's the next line say? There is no release from that war. We fight and try to live. We're built that way. God builds us to want to live. But you can't stop it. You can't stop. Yes, sir. I hope they don't disagree with me. I'm just kidding. Well, that's what the word spirit means. Yeah, it means breath. But and that's right. I mean, the wind, the word spirit there is the word comes is when we get the word pneumonia, which means pneuma or breath or wind or. But the spirit is described that way because that's the life of man is when he's breathing, when he has wind in his body. But I think he's referring to physical death there of the human being because of what he says. There's no power in the day of death. That's when your spirit leaves you. You can't stop the spirit from leaving. That's what he says. You can't stop the spirit of relief. You can't retain this power of the spirit. No one has power in the day of the death. And there's no release from that war. We keep trying. We fight all the time to keep on living. And eventually our bodies wear out and our spirit leaves and the body dies. No, does the spirit die? Where does the spirit go? Back to God who gave it. The body returns to the dust from which it came. The spirit returns to God who gave it. Is the spirit of man better than the spirit of the dog? Is it? You think it is? We didn't have that fight, help me, Sam. Okay. We won't approach it. Particularly this Ecclesiastes writer, when he thought about the spirit of the beast and the spirit of man, he's kind of frustrated about that. Who knows, he says, if it's better. Who knows? The spirit of man goes upward, goes to God, and the spirit of the beast goes to the earth from which it came. Who knows what's better? But that's the first one. He said, but who knows? He said, but that's a war that we're always going to fight. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. The wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. So there's a benefit to wisdom, but there's limitations to that. And so he concludes this section by saying, all this I have seen and applied to my heart, every work that is done under the sun, there is a time in which one man rules over another. So that's kind of what he's been talking about. One situation in life you're going to face in life is dealing with people who are in authority over you, and it's going to be better to use wisdom to do that. Now, again, you do that and respect the king, your life's going to be better. He ain't going to cut your head off. Don't be out here telling him what to do and what he's doing wrong. You respect him, give him his respect, give him his authority that he deserves, and do it as a respect for God, as an oath to God, and your life's going to be better. You obey the king's command, and nothing harmful will happen to you from the king, but that won't prevent you from dying. That won't prevent you death. You won't be able to prevent everything because of that, but your life will be better. And if you ever get to thinking, you know what, I need to be the king, that would be better. If you got to obey the king and do what the king says, and the king has power, all power, and exercises it the way he does, and verse 3 says, for he does whatever pleases him. That's the guy I want to be, not the guy answering to that guy. I want to be that guy. Well, is that best? No. Well, what do you say here? There is a time in which one man rules over another to what? His own hurt. Now, is that the hurt to the one he's ruling over? Is that his own? Is that to himself, the one doing the ruling? Could be both. And it is both. That's the point. It is both. Are all the kings happy? Is Solomon happy? Does he sound happy here? No. He's not happy with all the things that he's done as king. He tried to make himself happy, but he's not happy. Can't find one man in 1,000 that he finds good. How many women in 1,000 do you find good? None. How many did you find, Brother Dunaway? Oh, well, okay. All right, any other comments or questions? Yes, sir. Sure. Yeah. He did, didn't he? And what did he do with it? Been better off if he hadn't had it. If you look how he ended. But that's an example of where he prayed to God. I battle about that. You know, did he change God's mind or was it God's will anyway? Do I just want him to ask? But I suppose that if we didn't have the power to change God's minds, God wouldn't ask us to pray. And you know, one of the examples the New Testament gives is about praying when Jesus taught his disciples how to pray. You remember we talked about a friend at midnight and he says that he told him this story. And he said the purpose of telling them their story was this. You ought to always pray and not lose heart. You keep praying, you get what you want, maybe. If you keep praying. And he talked about, you remember that a man goes to a man's house and at midnight and asks for bread. And the man says, we sleep. And he keeps knocking. And he says, man, look here, I'm asleep. I got all my kids in the bed with me. You know, that's how they slept back then. You all grew up sleeping like that, didn't you? How many slept in the same bed? We're all in the bed. We can't come out. We're all in the bed. And you know, the way they had walls and gates they had to go through to protect the house. Well, I got to open the gate. The gate is shut. He kept having one excuse after another. God, my gate's shut. Can't get in there. And he kept knocking. I tell you, you get up a few years ago, about 2 o'clock in the morning one night, my doorbell rang. You know how unsettling that is. So I do whatever good godly preacher does in that setting, is I reach and got my 45. I'm just kidding. I jumped up, you know, and I'm kind of getting myself presentable. I think somebody's at my door. I go to the front door, nobody's there. I got two doorbells. I got one there on my outside of my front door, and there's one at the garage, in the door that leads into the house from the garage, but that garage door, you can't get to that door. Garage door's shut. And I looked out there to make sure the garage door was shut. So anyway, I looked, walked around the house, looked, turned all my floodlights on, looked. And I wondered if there's anybody out there, because that old German Shepherd I got, you can't hardly make a sound out there. He ain't trying to kill somebody, you know. So he wasn't barking. So anyway, I finally, after about 30 minutes, I go back to bed, lay down. I just get about almost sleep. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. I mean, it's like kids praying. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. So I jump up, you know, and I run out there. Nobody's there. Kimberly's up now. She's terrified. She's calling the police down there. And I go outside my flashlight, looking around. And then the police come, and they call drive. They said, we'll drive. Probably some kids. We drive around, look at everything. Police, hang on, man. Don't ring up. Police, go around there. That's what it sounded like, by the way. Anyway, police go around. They shining lights. Everybody little spotlights everywhere, shining them. Come back, we can't find anybody. We'll keep patrolling the area. We'll just drive up and down these streets right here. We'll be around your house just to see if anybody. And that'll probably scare them away. Probably kids. So I lay back down. 20 minutes later, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. And I go, I say, well, maybe somebody's locked in the garage. You know, anyway, I'm wits end. So open the blind of that door that goes to the garage. And that light on that button out there in the garage flickers. Ain't supposed to, I don't think, but it flickers. Like that. And I look down, and there's a cat locked in my garage. And when that light's blinking, he's slapping at it. You know, you know how you get the laser light, and you get a cat to chase that light all over the road? Anyway, I shot that cat, and he didn't come back. I'm just kidding. I didn't shoot the cat. But that's a little unsettling. Anyway, but so you keep knocking, and he'll get up. That's what his point was to his disciples. You keep asking, you may get what you're asking for. All right, it's a good question. All right.